right. Good afternoon, Seattle. Another beautiful day here, Tuesday, September 21st. My birthday, actually, for those listening out there. So, yep, I'm here on my birthday because I enjoy doing this, and this is a good gift to me. So for those just tuning in, my name is Ross Krause. I am a certified financial planner. I host a show every Tuesday from noon from 12 to 12:30 called The Money Seat, where people ask me questions related to money and I answer them. Feel free to call in at 425-373-5527 and ask a question. If you're shy and want to email a question, I'm at Ross.Krause, R-O-S-S dot K-R-A-U-S-E at LPL.com, or you could go to my website, RossKrause.com, and answer or sponsor the show as well. Before I get to some of our questions here, because we actually have a good amount of emailed, texted questions today that I'm going to address, I am going to be on Stacey Heller's show later today at 3, from 3 to 4. So if you're listening to this now and just 30 minutes isn't enough of my voice and all this fabulous stuff, feel free to tune in later today from 3 to 4 o'clock. I'm very interested and excited to be on her show. She's been a guest on mine a number of times, and it's fantastic to return the favor. So anyways, I am going to get to some of these text questions. I do want everyone to know that I've been getting a lot of questions about specific topics, and I'm going to be dedicating a few episodes in the future, maybe once a month coming down the road, to a given topic. So whether that's the long-term care and especially the new law in Washington, whether it's about COVID and the market and what we should be doing, whether it's about Roth IRA and, you know, tax advantageous accounts, whether it's on socially responsible investing, which I have some questions here, whether it's on life insurance, blah, 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 you get it. I'm going to start dedicating, you know, 20, 25 minutes to some specific topics to kind of provide some more in-depth knowledge, because a lot of times I realize when you ask questions and they're great, we mostly scratch the surface. And I think it'd be great for a few of the hot topics to go into it. And in fact, feel free to call in or go to my website, rosskrause.com. And if you don't want a question, you can just email me, hey, I'd want to learn a bit more about this. And I'm happy to take a poll and kind of start with those hottest topics. So anyways, I know I had some great questions last time, and I kind of want to keep going with some of them. And we have a few different subjects. So let me start with the first kind of subject, general questions from Ken. And Kem asks, what's a CFA versus a CFP versus a PFS? So a CFA is a certified financial analyst. That's someone that would be working for a company, would be working for an investment firm, that would be doing back office research on stocks, on the finances of the company, and recommending, you know, buying this stock versus this stock or this company versus that, or really kind of doing a more back office but fundamental research for companies, not necessarily working with individuals on their finances. I'd like to say that to get a CFA, there's actually three different levels. So it takes about 3 years at minimum for people to get one. They get the first level, takes about a year, then they have to pass CFA level two, then they have to pass CFA level three, which is the hardest one. I know a few people who are on two or are on three. Each one is a huge accomplishment in itself. But all of them were working in not client-facing roles. So that brings me to, well, what's a CFP? And a CFP is a certified financial planner. They might also be assisting a company with financial planning, but it's going to be on retirement planning, on what's the best tax contribution strategy, on when someone can retire, on how much they need to live on retirement, right, versus financial analysts of numbers and stocks and about, you know, things. It's going to be more about a person, a company, more like a CFO as well. And a CFP, unlike a CFA, has one level. But in order to do a CFP, you actually have to have an accredited certificate. So you have to take six classes from an accredited university first, which generally takes about My guy did an accelerated program in about 7-8 months, but usually it takes about 1.5 to 2 years. And you take 6 courses, intro to financial planning, insurance planning, retirement planning, estate planning, tax and investment. And then at the end, you do an actual case study where you have to like present a case, like you're doing an actual financial plan about a fictional family and go over all their recommendations and, you know, and analyze their situation. And then once you get that done, then you could sit for the CFP exam. So while the exam itself isn't as rigorous as the CFA, the whole process does still take about a few years. Like I said, I did my accelerated one in 10 months. It was insane. Every Monday and Wednesday from 5 to 7 p.m., I had class and then tests every about 4 weeks. So that was fun on top of work. But the difference is usually if you're going to be doing this stuff, working with someone on your retirement, you're going to be working with the CFP. If you're going to be, and then the CFP is going to be working like myself with CFAs at other companies and part of the investment team to help pick the investments for the client. So CFP is a little more forward facing in front, CFA is a little bit more back office. So that's a great question. So the second question from Ken is, how often should you meet with your financial planner? And what if you want to meet more often? So how often should you meet with your financial planner? The bare minimum is once a year. I can't tell you how many clients I've had in the past with, you know, doing joint work with other people that you call and they never answer your phone. And it's like they have no desire to meet and review their accounts and their money. There might not be much to discuss. You might have had a quiet year. It might be like things sound good. You need to meet with your financial planner at least once a year. However, if you're older, if you have more going on in life, if things are changing, if you're getting closer to retirement, you should be meeting it. Maybe 2 in-person times a year. A lot of times, higher net worth clients that are more complicated meet 4 times a year to kind of go, you know, tax season, end of the year, stuff like that. And each one has a different goal because while you might not be going over investment performance every time, there's a lot of subjects, right? You might do one meeting that's about insurance and one's about tax management and then one's about investments and one's about retirement planning or education, right? So if you're a more complicated situation, you should be meeting 4 times a year to do different type of stuff, if that makes sense. Otherwise, you're going to try to jam everything in one meeting and that's not going to be very productive. I do have a client who wants to meet once a month and that's fine. The question is, what if you want to meet more often? That's also fine, right? You should never be meeting once a week. I think that's a little unnecessary, and you're probably getting a little neurotic with that. But if you want to meet once a month, that's fine. So your question is, what if you want to meet more often? You should. Just don't expect your advisor or financial planner to know that. Sometimes I ask my people how often they want to meet. Doesn't always happen. You should say, hey, I want to be meeting every month, every quarter, or I want to at least have a phone call checkup. So they give you a call and say, hey, is there anything on your mind that you want to discuss this month? Oh, yeah, as a matter of fact, there is, blah, 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 right? Or nope, right? So just make sure they're calling you. If you're bringing it up to your person you're working with and they have an issue with that, then you need to find someone else because if someone's response is, hey, sorry, we only meet with clients of your size, you know, once a year, then sorry, find someone else who's going to give you the time you deserve, regardless of what you have. Okay, so that probably won't happen, but if it does, I'd caution that because I'd caution how much they're actually putting in time and effort into you as well. But you should make sure your voice is heard and reach out and discuss that with the person you're working with within reason, like I said. I think anything more than once a month is probably unnecessary unless there's something huge going on that's going to take up a lot of time in a short term. But that's a great question. Question number 3 from Ken. Ken had a lot of great questions, by the way, so thank you, Ken. Do you coordinate tax advice with financial advice? So I am not a CPA, a certified public accountant, so I'm not going to do your taxes. And there's a big difference between what I do and a CPA because they're going to be backward-looking. They're going to be like, okay, here's the snapshot of your financial picture. How do we save money in taxes? They're not going to do much more than that. While I'm kind of quarterbacking everything with estate and retirement and insurance and figuring out how to invest with taxes and right put money in it correctly. But I do coordinate and would like to with you, with your CPA, or if you're doing it yourself. So generally, it's always good to talk to the CPA to look at a tax return from you and see if there's opportunities. Remember, the CPA people think it's they're going to just like tell you everything to do and you're all set for taxes. And that's not true. They're going to make sure your taxes are done and make sure you're taking the right deductions. And you're not getting in trouble. But there's always a lot of opportunities investment wise, IRA contribution wise, especially if you have your own business, to maximize and optimize stuff. And my job is to work with them as a team. You want to have, you know, an estate planner or a lawyer, a CPA, an accountant, right, and a financial planner. And they all work together, right? So you have a tripod, essentially. So I would recommend if you have a CPA and you have an advisor, have them have a meeting, right? Have them sit with you on a meeting in March when you're doing your taxes and just have some advice. Or if you don't have one or the other, ask one of them for a referral or a recommendation for the other, because I think it's very important to have both. And yes, I do coordinate, but I'm not doing, right? If you ask me, hey, Ross, so now I want you to do my taxes, that's not my role. I'm not going to do that. I'll refer to someone else. I do know a few advisors who have firms and do that, but it is very important to, yes, coordinate it all together based on your situation, so they're not in the blind. So great question, Ken. So let me move over to Jay. And Jay has a question. How has COVID impacted the market? So, yeah, we only have about 15 minutes left and I have some other questions. So let me try to gloss over this. The market went down a lot last week, but let's forget last week. Overall, in the last year, COVID happened in about February or March in America. And the market went down about 20 or 30%, got crushed. And this is the everything market, not just large or small or everything, crushed. Tech, you know, Amazon got crushed and Costco, right? So took about, I don't know, 4 or 5 months to bounce back. Since then, since that point, let's say about August, September of last year, when things kind of bounced back and got more stabilized, the market's been up incredible, 20-30%. I don't have the exact numbers. Don't quote me on that. Look it up. Each indices are going to have different things, but it's very well. My accounts, my clients' portfolios have done well. Not too much credit for me, mostly the market, right? But in general, things have done very well. So that doesn't make any sense, right? You're thinking about that. I'm like, why? Why was the market up 35% since September of last year? Well, that's a good question. Short-term markets are very difficult to explain, but COVID has impacted a lot of sectors. So if you think about it, right, the hotel sector, the travel industry, the cruise industry, the airlines industry, they're not up 35% in the last year. So it has had a huge effect on some sectors. On the other side, besides some tech stocks that haven't done well, a lot of them were killing it because everyone's at home and they're using technology and they're buying stuff online now and they're using other apps and right, it's just where the world's going. The healthcare sector has done very well. It's really impacted. You know, Pfizer and Moderna, those stocks have done quite well in the last year. And just kind of general healthcare sector and biotechnology sectors and stocks have done very well. Very well, maybe 50, 60% or more. And that's kind of covered up a lot of nothing. So overall, it's had a huge impact on the market and the labor shortage and real estate. And at the same time, if you balance everything out together, it actually hasn't really done anything but help it, which is weird. So is that a concern? Probably. Fundamentally, is the economy doing great right now? It's not, you know, 35% better than it was last year. So there's a lot of inflated stock prices, a lot of things that are kind of a little worrisome down the road, that is this all going to catch up to us? Probably. The question is when. I don't know. If anyone tells you when, once again, they're lying because nobody knows. They're just guessing and maybe they'll be right. But COVID has impacted the market, but it's impacted it in a positive way so far. Whether that's going to continue, probably not. We don't know. But just to give you kind of a basic broad level of that. That's how it is. So, great question. Kate has a different question, and her question is, are there rules Are there any rules about refinancing the mortgage rate in your house? Is it a good move to do it? So I've had a few questions related to real estate. I actually had a client who asked me a question, and I'm going to kind of address this refinancing, the mortgage stuff, all in one fell swoop. So I had a client say, hey, Ross, I just read an article that included a suggestion that people should think about paying down their mortgage with their retirement savings. Oh, God. So, first of all, there's nothing wrong with having a mortgage, right? This isn't 1970 or 80 where you have these 10, 12, 15% mortgages and interest for 30 years, okay? Right now, with even with inflation and interest rates maybe rising, you can get a pretty good rate on a mortgage, let's say 2 to 3, at 4 at most, right? That's very low. So as long as you're not underwater, there's not a lot of, like, motivation to pay that off, right? Why would you want to put money towards something to save 1 or 2% when your money is more efficiently spent elsewhere? In addition, this suggestion is just so terrible. It might be good for a few people, but overall, this is just an absolute awful article with terrible suggestions, because if you take money out of your retirement savings, you're going to get taxed on that and possibly penalized to then pay off a mortgage that might have a 1 or 2% interest rate. That is insane, to pay 20% possibly in taxes, plus losing out on the 6 to 8% annual growth on your investments from your retirement account. So there might be some situations where this applies, which is why I hate these articles. But most of the time, this is a bad suggestion for most people's situation. If you read or see suggestions like this and similar stuff, please, please, please don't blindly take this advice. You need to talk with an advisor you're working with or a professional and figure out if that actually applies to your situation. Because these articles don't know anything about you. They could have been written a while ago. They could have conflict of interest because the person who wrote it has, you know, some ties to mortgage companies. I don't know. But you just got to, like, that's not a good advice. So in terms of real estate and mortgages, right now, there's nothing wrong with having a mortgage, especially because real estate prices are going up. Mortgages are very low interest rates. Your money's the market, 6 to 8% of the market is going to destroy 1 or 2 or 3% interest rate on your mortgage, and you're going to be missing a lot of opportunities on that end. So there's nothing wrong, right? I used to preach people, you want to retire and have your mortgage paid off. Depending on what your mortgage is, and if you have everything planned, that's not necessarily true or that helpful anymore. So I think it's kind of important for people to get, kind of adjust that philosophy with the times, right? If interest rates go up and we start seeing inflation and the real estate market crashes and all of a sudden you're getting a new house and your mortgage, right? I mean, your mortgage goes up, you're buying a house. This wouldn't be people have current mortgages, but you're going to get one later and all of a sudden it's, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7%. Then that's a different story. But in terms of refinancing, I actually refinanced when I owned. I got a mortgage at 4 3/4. Not great, to be honest. Interest rates went down, and I was able to refinance to 3 1/4. That's worth it, right? So you could run a cost analysis with an Excel spreadsheet. If you don't have that, you could use some software on the internet that says current mortgage, current years, current interest rates, and then it'll be like, what would you refinance it to? And it'll show you, you could put all that numbers in, and then you could figure out, okay, what's the difference? How much are you saving every month? Great, I'm saving $150 a month. This is going to cost me, you know, $2,000. So in 13 months, I'll be breaking even, and then I'll be in the clear. Okay, great. Do I want to do that? That's really it. It's a very simple fundamental analysis that you should be able to do. You just need to know the cost of that. Generally, refinancing is not that expensive. And if you could save a point, point and a half, really a point or more, and you have a long, you know, if you have 5 years, it's not worth it. But if you got, you know, 10, 15, absolutely worth it to look at and do. Right now, if you haven't refinanced in the last few years and you're listening to this, please look into it. Because if you're paying anything in fours or above, you're missing an opportunity to refinance. I promise you. If you're in the threes, that might be a little bit more complicated. And if you're anywhere below three, you're great. You're in good position, even if you could save a quarter or half. Generally not worth it, just to give you an idea. Unless you're talking about $10 million, right, instead of then that might be a little bit different. But generally for regular houses, quarter, half a point, not generally worth it. But that's a great question, because I think people get too hung up on paying off. And it's okay, right? It's fine. It's good debt. This, especially if it has a low interest rate, debt in your house, if you have a lot more equity than the debt, it's fine. It's good debt. Your money's better off elsewhere, and you're not in any real hurt. So thank you for that. That might be something to spend some more time later. We have a few minutes left. I got some other questions here, so stay with me. I'm trying to pull up my phone. Okay. Chris, we're going to switch gears. Talk to me about sustainability in the stock market. Are there portfolios that invest exclusively in sustainable companies? That is a great question, Chris. So, yes, there are. They're not in your 401k, so it's something you have to do on the side. So what I do is I do a lot of investing in ESG or environment and socially responsible investing. Sometimes it's called SRI. ESG, SRI, socially responsible investing, is very possible. You could get an entire portfolio, and I've done it for clients, with socially responsible investing. If you want to be all in clean energy, we can do that. If you want to be not in oil or not in guns and tobacco or whatever political, religious beliefs, whatever it is you have, it's absolutely possible to do that. I have funds that invest in women leadership funds that are a fund that has stocks that have either women on the board or a certain percent or women running the company. That's possible if you didn't know that. Like I said, clean energy, solar energy, wind, hydro, whatever you want. It's very, very possible. There's companies you can invest in funds that are a certain portion gets donated to charity of the profits. You name it, it's out there. And if you didn't know that, which most people don't, it's because you have to go find it. You have to ask your advisor. If you bring it up, they should be able to do that and construct a portfolio for you. And once again, it's not in your 401k. So if that's where your only money is, you might be wondering, well, I don't have that or I can't get that. And that's why you have to work on your own or find it, work with an advisor and make that known. I do want to point out, because some people worry about this, am I sacrificing returns for this? In the past, maybe things weren't done as efficiently. Socially responsible and sustainable funds weren't necessarily proactive. What they did was they just said, we're just not including these companies. These companies are not sustainable, so we won't include them in their portfolio. That's all they did. And some of those companies were doing very well, and you'd miss out on those returns. But now, with so many companies and so much stuff going on, and the fact that people are shopping and spending their money on companies and places that they believe in that have good causes, those companies are also financially doing well. And so you not only can, instead of being reactive like before, you could be proactive. And these funds are actually going out and finding the companies doing things right and are ahead of the curve, as opposed to just kicking out the companies that are behind the curve. Hopefully that makes sense. So as a result, I have actually compared an aggressive growth, a growth in income, a socially responsible portfolio of the same, basically the same type of funds, the same asset diversification. And the last few years, they've done slightly better, the socially responsible investing. Is that a coincidence? Is that a trend? Does that mean anything? I don't know, because 2 to 3 years in the market is not enough to tell you if that's a fact, if that's a pattern, if there's substance in that, or if it's just random luck, right? Not enough time. But I would say, and my hunch would be, it's not a bad place to be. It's not a bad place to look. And if you don't want to compromise, right, you don't want to compromise on where you put your money and where you shop and where you go to eat and all that stuff, then you shouldn't have to compromise on where you invest your money as well in the market. And if you're something that's passionate to you, you should do that. And you should feel confident that you could do it without sacrificing returns. That's kind of my big issue. My big point on this. I have one more question here to get to before I run out of time. And it's from Linda. And Linda says, the benefits of investing with someone like you versus through my bank. Okay. So it's a good question. So the first one is there's a few actual tangible benefits. One is that I have a CFP. I don't know if your person at the bank does. Two, your person at the bank will always have some type of conflict of interest, meaning there's going to be some bank product that they're compensated to sell or bring up or do that I don't have. If you work for someone at Wells Fargo or JP Morgan, they have banking divisions. The person you're going to work with is going to be compensated based on either how much assets they bring in, if you open up another bank checking account, if you bring over other bank accounts and do savings, if you sign up with them for their mortgage and use their products, they get compensated for that. It doesn't mean they're going to do anything unethical. It doesn't mean that they're going to do anything wrong, but they could. And it's important to know that that is there, that that is part of the motivation. Luckily for me, it doesn't matter how you invest with me. This is what I charge. I make money kind of with my investments and my advice, and it's all the same, whether you're in this product or that or whatever. So there's not a really conflict of interest in there besides that I want you to be my client. That's the conflict of interest. I don't want you to go to them. I want you to go with me, right? That's really it. So that's a big difference. Two is that you're also not necessarily going to be, maybe for some people, but a lot of times with banks, just like with money, you are a number and you might not get the personalized care and planning and feel. I've had clients that are much older and they used to get that awesome feel in the bank and go and feel like they were cared about and loved at the bank. And obviously that's not the case anymore with banks. So if you want that personalization, if you want someone to really know you and really get and feel that that you trust them and everything, a bank is probably not the best point for investable assets. Looks like I'm out of time. There's a little bit more to that. Reach out and I could go over that. But anyways, thanks for listening. Once again, this is Ross Krause at The Money Seat. I will see you next week. And if you're free later at 3 o'clock this afternoon, I'll be here on Stacey Heller's show. Thank you very much. See you next week. Bye.
Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professionals prior to making a decision. All performance referenced is historical and is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. Economic forecasts set forth may not develop as predicted, and there can be no guarantee that strategies promoted will be successful.